First, it's the Week in Washington, where we check in on several top stories in national politics. President-elect Joe Biden's campaign now has the formal go-ahead from the Trump administration to begin formally transitioning into power, while President Trump continues his push to overturn the results of the election after a long string of losses in the courts. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. We're going to look at the cabinet announcements so far from President-elect Biden. Have you been following those nominations? What do you think of some of the names he's picked? Who would you like to see represented in the cabinet? And what kind of policies would you like to see those cabinet appointees advocating for? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Duren covers Congress and American politics at the Wall Street Journal. He's based in Washington. Andy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, President Trump still hasn't formally conceded. He's still talking about contesting the outcome of the election. But we have this General Services Administration announcement saying, yeah, Biden team, you can get access to information, to funding, to offices, things like that. How big a deal is that?
I think it's a step that certainly the Biden transition team and Democrats in Washington had been anxious to see happen. I mean, yeah, this is important for a number of reasons. I mean, it does allow the transition team to now begin holding more formal conversations with folks at executive agencies across the government about, how things are going there, what's going on, and how the Biden administration can eventually step in and kind of, hit the ground running, so to speak. I think it's also important, in terms of there's a cybersecurity angle to all of this. So without GSA ascertaining the results of the election, the Biden transition team had been, using their own email security services, for example. And so things like that do, carry a certain amount of risk in terms of just national security. And then there's of course, the president-elect receiving regular intelligence briefings. And so that is also something that a lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill in particular had focused on as something that needed to start happening so that, when Joe Biden does take over next year, that he is, again, just up to speed on all of the various national security and intelligence developments before he takes office.
We'll get into what we know about cabinet appointments, potential ones, in just a couple of minutes. But what else have we been seeing from the Biden team when it comes to trying to get this transition in order, both leading up to this GSA determination and since?
So, yeah, he's named, not only has he named folks who he intends to nominate to a bunch of cabinet positions or will nominate to cabinet positions, but also several of his top staffers within the White House, people who are positions that do not require Senate confirmation. So we've seen a pretty steady, set of those folks being announced. And then he's held briefings and meetings with top Democrats on Capitol Hill. So one of the primary things on the agenda for Democrats and Republicans in Washington right now is trying to pass another coronavirus relief bill. And so these negotiations have been going on for months and months. But now, President-elect Biden is more formally involved in those. He held a meeting in person with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer last week. And they discussed, how they can get a bill like that together during the lame duck and before Biden actually takes over. So I'm sure things are plenty busy for the transition folks.
Talking to Andy Duren from The Wall Street Journal. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching cabinet announcements from the Biden team? And what are you looking for in a new cabinet? 800-642-1234. Andy, some key appointments. I mean, the top spot in the cabinet in many ways is the Secretary of State. We've got a Treasury Secretary nominee. Talk about what we're seeing so far from the Biden team.
Yeah, so I think overall you're seeing, so at Secretary of State, you have Antony Blinken, and then in Treasury, the Wall Street Journal and a bunch of other outlets have reported that Janet Yellen is the choice for that cabinet, though it has not been formally announced. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in both those cases, in the case of Blinken, I mean, he's someone who's worked for Joe Biden for a long time now, has been kind of a part of Biden's team during the campaign advising him, and is seen as someone who will, you know, both be a kind of credible representative of you know, the Joe Biden when he's the president in terms of speaking on his behalf, and then also is seen as someone to have a more kind of conventional view of, you know, America's role in the world in terms of trying to work through, you know, international alliances, multilateral organizations, and trying to kind of project American power that way, rather than, you know, what we've seen the last few years, which has focused more on the United States acting independently. And then in the case of Janet Yellen, I mean, she's someone who has served, you know, in the White House during the Clinton administration. She was the Fed chair during the Obama administration, and now she'll be the Treasury Secretary during the Biden administration. So she's obviously been around kind of Democratic economic policymaking for a long time now. And I think she, I believe she will be the first person to have held a role both as the, you know, the lead of the Council of Economic Advisors, the Fed chair, and now the Treasury Secretary. And so she is someone who I think, you know, obviously is kind of an old hand at this and is very experienced, but she's also someone who's, you know, well-respected and well-liked by, you know, kind of across the Democratic Party. You know, she's someone who obviously Biden chose, but then kind of more progressive Democrats, liberal Democrats have also kind of endorsed her selection. Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, you know, was quick to say that she supported Yellen's nomination. And so, yeah, I think basically you're seeing so far, you know, experienced people in the, you know, who've worked in Democratic politics, worked for Joe Biden possibly for a long time, and who have possibly conventional approaches or, you know, established approaches to policymaking at the executive level.
You mentioned Antony Blinken announced as the nominee upcoming for Secretary of State. Here's a listen to him talking about, in this case, the story of his stepfather as a child surviving the Holocaust in Poland. Here's a listen.
At the end of the war, he made a break from a death march into the woods in Bavaria. From his hiding place, he heard a deep rumbling sound. It was a tank. But instead of the Iron Cross, he saw painted on its side a five-pointed white star. He ran to the tank. The hatch opened. An African-American GI looked down at him. He got down on his knees and said the only three words that he knew in English that his mother had taught him before the war. God bless America. That's who we are. That's what America represents to the world, however imperfectly. Now, we have to proceed with equal measures of humility and confidence.
So a powerful personal story there from Antony Blinken, Secretary of State nominee, coming up, not officially nominated yet. But it fits a theme, I think, Andy, of what the Biden team, a message they're sending about how they're approaching foreign policy differently than the Trump administration. Can you talk about what we've seen there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, this is the idea is to, I think, reengage with, you know, countries that have, you know, long been close American allies and work with them through through the infrastructure that was set up after World War II, the international kind of policymaking infrastructure that was set up after World War II. You know, under the Trump administration, you saw things like, you know, the United States kind of challenging NATO countries to, you know, contribute more to their own military defense. You saw things like the United States moving troops out of Germany. You saw, you know, just in general, the Trump administration was trying to basically encourage or prod allies to, you know, pick up some of the weight themselves and contribute to their own defense or play a role that the United States had traditionally played for them. I think under the Biden administration, we'll probably see a less confrontational approach between the United States and its, you know, European and its allies in Europe, its allies in Asia, and I think elsewhere. I mean, I think we'll see again, just a more conventional approach to our, you know, the American footprint and our relationship with our allies overseas.
We invited our listeners to call in with their ideas, what they want to see from a Biden cabinet in terms of people or policies. Let's go to our callers now. Paul is with us in La Crosse. Paul, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Paul?
There's a 1985 Sherman Antitrust Act. It's basically an anti-monopoly law. I think Biden should start looking at more, maybe tweaking the law or maybe add to it or take away from it. And in terms of economic distress in this country and make it, you know, better.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. And I know some progressives in the Democratic Party, Andy, want to see in some cases more confrontational approaches between the government and large businesses, including maybe in some cases antitrust. Have we seen any signals along those lines yet?
I mean, I think that's certainly something we could see under a Biden administration. I mean, that actually, and I think this is one of those areas where there's kind of a broad bipartisan agreement that there should be more. There should be maybe some action taken against large companies. I mean, I think in particular, there's been a lot of bipartisan ire focused on big tech companies, companies like Facebook and Google. There seems to be a bipartisan motivation to take on those companies. I mean, you saw the Justice Department under President Trump take some antitrust actions and sue Google, for example, in court. And so I think it will be interesting to see, you know, how much of that continues, or, you know, even if maybe there are some of these same concerns about the power and the influence and the concentration of large corporations, you know, if there's a change in tactics or a change in approach, while also maybe sharing kind of the same, you know, general viewpoint on the concentration of corporate power.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Chad now in Madison. Chad, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was just thinking Andrew Yang would be the perfect choice because Democrats can't lose any more House representatives or senators to put into the cabinet. So he would be a perfect choice because progressives would be, you know, a little bit happier with knowing that we have somebody on our side that's in there. So,
Chad, thanks a lot for the call. Andy, Biden turned to one of his former Democratic primary opponents as his running mate. Any thought of or any talk about Andrew Yang or any of the other large field of Democratic candidates making it to a cabinet position?
Yeah, so I haven't heard anything about Andrew Yang specifically, but I think so far, you know, Biden has signaled that he might not. That while some of his choices so far have not, you know, necessarily upset progressives, he also hasn't chosen someone who's considered kind of a progressive superstar. I mean, I think the most, you know, telling thing he said recently on that question is he said in an NBC interview yesterday that he's unlikely to maybe pull someone out of the House or the Senate to fill a cabinet post. So the kind of most, you know, the people who that have the clearest consequences for are Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, two of his, his rivals in the presidential primary, who are, you know, kind of progressive superstars and leaders of that wing of the party. And they're both folks who, you know, have been considered or rumored or seen as possible selections for Treasury in the sake of Elizabeth Warren, and then the Labor Department in Bernie Sanders' instance. And so, I think that it's possible that, you know, we could still see, you know, there are a lot of cabinet positions. And so we could still see, you know, people who have kind of well-established kind of progressive followings and progressive bona fides enter the cabinet in some capacity. But, you know, he has started to signal at least that it's unlikely to be Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren.
Thanks, Chad, for the call. We're talking to Andy Duren from The Wall Street Journal. It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics coming up. More COVID-19 funding, the return of Infrastructure Week. Do you want to see the House and Senate agree on COVID-19 relief funding before the year ends? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Andy Duren, congressional reporter for The Wall Street Journal. It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want Congress to pass new COVID-19 economic relief funding? If so, what should the focus be? Should it be big or small? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Andy, this has been going on for months now. The House had passed a plan. The Senate has looked at different plans. Nothing is happening. What is the state of the art when it comes to more COVID-19 economic relief?
So, there have been talks on and off again for several months now between Republicans and Democrats on another one of these relief bills. I mean, the biggest issue has just been a kind of totally different set of scales in terms of what each party thinks is necessary. Democrats see you know, more than $2 trillion as being in the neighborhood of what the country needs right now in terms of more relief, and Republicans see about $500 billion. So that's, you know, that's a big difference. And that's kind of remained the widest chasm between the two parties. But we are coming up towards the end of the year now, and a couple of things are happening that might kind of pull people to work something out, or at least agree to something. So one is that the virus continues to get worse in a lot of places in a lot of the country. There are, you know, some expectations that will, you know, start to have an impact on the economy, and that the economic recovery that started over the summer will kind of slow and even stop, and that we might start to see unemployment climb again and enter kind of a double dip recession. So there's that to contend with. Then at the same time, several aid programs that were approved in the spring are expiring at the end of the calendar year. So those are certain types of unemployment benefits, things like deferments on federally held student loans, an eviction moratorium ordered by the CDC. Those are all coming to the end this year, are all coming to an end at the end of this year. And then the third thing is that the government is just regular government funding is set to run out in December. And so Congress is already working towards figuring out an agreement on just funding the government. And so with all of that happening, Congress might try to extend some of these existing programs, or even, agree to additional aid measures that would be passed in conjunction with a spending agreement to keep the government funded after December 11th.
Let's bring on a caller on this topic. Miles is on the line in Grafton. Miles, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, I would love if they were able to pass, more relief or another stimulus, especially before the new year. You know, people talk about living paycheck to paycheck. I'm out here living rent to rent, and my wife hasn't even bought groceries for the last few weeks. I mean, we're making it work, but it's hard out here for some of us lower-income families, you know?
Was your job hit by COVID-19 or your wife's, Miles?
My job was at the time I'm transitioning right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to hear the answer to that. Your line's breaking up, Miles. Thank you for calling in. Good luck to you and your family. And some people, their jobs, of course, in the restaurant industry, entertainment, travel, Andy, hit super hard. Is there talk of something really focused on those people who have really taken the brunt of COVID-19 and the damage it's done to their part of the economy?
Yeah, so there is talk. There's talk on a number of different things that would target those folks. So one is reviving more generous unemployment checks that were in place for kind of the first part of the pandemic between March and July, where the federal government was adding $600 a week to the state unemployment benefits that states typically pay out. So both Republicans and Democrats want to put more federal money on top of that. There's a disagreement in terms of how much, but that is one way that, folks who did lose their job or who will lose their job as a result of the pandemic could rely on a more generous unemployment benefit. Another is, there are discussions of, some Democrats certainly favor doing sending another $1,200 stimulus check to many Americans. So that is something that could help a lot of folks. And then there's also, loaning more money to and sending more money to small businesses across the country to try and prevent layoffs in the first place. So there was a big small business loan program, the Paycheck Protection Program, it is called that, basically $500 trillion to businesses across the country. And that loan was forgivable if, businesses use that money to keep people on payroll and continue to pay them, even if, they were shut down or if they weren't operating. So those are some of the three kind of biggest tools Congress has and that they used, earlier this year. They just, because of the impasse, a lot of those programs expired or, aren't available to folks anymore or could expire soon. And so Congress is likely, if they were to do something, to revive or renew some of those efforts.
And Andy, I want to take a couple of minutes to look at a piece you wrote on what's kind of become an evergreen topic, the idea that infrastructure is something that Republicans and Democrats can work together on, a place where they can find some compromise. What's the latest on that with the incoming Biden administration?
Yeah, so obviously it became kind of a running joke, a bad joke in the Trump administration, this idea that there would be a week dedicated to infrastructure and both parties would come together and pass a big infrastructure bill. And obviously that didn't happen over the course of 4 years. When Trump came into office, Democrats were optimistic that this was something they could work with the new president on, but it never materialized. Now with the prospect that you know, there will again be divided government next year if Republicans hold on to control of the Senate, which, you know, certainly seems like it's possible. There are two runoff races in Georgia on January 5th that will determine which party has a majority in that chamber. And so, you know, in the event that there is again divided government, Republicans do control the Senate, the one policy area that people I talked to said, you know, the two parties could come together on beyond kind of just the things they have to get done to prevent calamity is infrastructure. So, you know, there's been a longstanding need for infrastructure. You know, a lot of civil engineers and experts say that, you know, America's infrastructure system, whether that's roads or water systems or the energy grid or, you know, the various forms of infrastructure is kind of in drastic need of renewed federal investment. And so this is already something that Democrats are preparing for as something that they will try and focus on next year, kind of no matter how the Senate goes. And they also see it as a form of economic stimulus. You know, there's obviously these discussions now about a relief bill, but even kind of later on in 2021, there might be an effort to do a more long lasting and a more kind of conventional stimulus bill to inject money into the economy. And that, you know, infrastructure is one of those, certainly one of those options. And so we'll see how it goes. Obviously, there's been a bipartisan desire for this for a long time. You know, Republicans didn't do it when they had total control of the government the first 2 years of the Trump administration. It didn't happen under divided government of the Trump administration. But, you know, some folks are at least optimistic that, you know, with a new White House and, you know, maybe a more concentrated push from the White House to try and get something done, that we could possibly see an infrastructure bill sometime in 2021.
Andy, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Duren covers Congress and U.S. politics for The Wall Street Journal. We talked to him today about some of the week's top stories in national politics, including President-elect Biden's announcements of some picks for cabinet positions and the state of federal coronavirus relief.